All right. Hello, everybody. Today I have Sylvia. Sylvia, introduce yourself.
Hi. My name is Sylvia. I'm a VFX artist
from Malaysia.
Yes, from Malaysia. And it's like we're in the opposite time zone.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I mean, it's crazy right now. So, wait, this is the second trial on the recording. So you were mentioning before your origin story from Malaysia, you know, going through the VFX industry as a multimedia artist, would you say? So tell us a little bit about that so that we're up and running.
Yeah, okay. So where should I start?
With the multimedia.
Oh, okay, yeah. I was a multimedia artist. I mean, I studied multimedia and touched briefly on 3D modeling.
Yes.
Yeah, and then I just took an internship with a local game company because just simply I liked 3D modeling. Yeah, but after that, I could not land a job with them because, well, the industry is oversaturated.
Yep.
3D modeler, so yeah, that is why. But there was a company with an opening. They are taking in a big batch of fresh grads and willing to train them to work on an animation series.
Cool.
Yep. They ask if I want to learn Nuke, the compositing software, or Maya. With me being reluctant on using Nuke, the first time I'm seeing all the node stuff, it's really confusing and so scary.
Yeah.
So I went with Maya because I used Maya for 3D modeling.
Yeah.
But yeah, the challenge was we have to make water because the animation series is about some boats chatting and it's a kid show where the boats are constantly moving on top of the water and then you have to make the water like the wakes and splashes and how they zoom around. So that was my experience, like very first experience with VFX.
And but for then, film, of course, at the moment.
Yeah, it's for animation. It's not for like
a game.
Games.
Yeah,
but back then they actually had a game team and I looked up to them like they are some sort of elite. Like, okay, you have to be an elite to join the game team. Yeah.
Cool.
Yep. Then after that, I left the industry because it was a contract job. It was not a full-time. Yep. And then the job searching was hard. Hence, I left the industry.
Yeah.
I worked for event company and helped them take care of fruit stalls.
Nice.
Yeah.
A lot of disciplines you've learned across all the experiences so far.
Yeah, maybe like, well, I should just add it to like my soft skills. I can identify durians, you know. Like, which breed of durians, the stinky fruit.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
It's a skill. I mean, yeah. I feel like those soft skills, they add a lot to problem solving somehow. Like if here's the thing, like if you have the memory to know which breed the fruit is, you probably can save like the different styles and workflows in your brain when it comes to real-time VFX, right? Comes in handy.
I guess. I guess. Because to identify them, it's by smell, but I guess it works.
Yeah, I mean, you can't smell an effect. Yeah, that's for sure.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, it's the different things that we have to do in the games industry or films industry or whatever. Like, as generalists, we, or as people who work in entertainment, some days there's work, and some days there's just no work. And it's the curse. I feel like it's still better to know many skills. So when there is no job as a 3D modeler, you can probably start making water effects in Maya.
Yeah.
Or get into a different multidisciplinary skill like real-time VFX. So I wanted to ask you, like, when was the first encounter with real-time effects? When did you know it was a thing?
It was in 2019. After I left the industry, I actually went back to study. I mean, like, after the event company, I went to study a course that is for game development.
Mm-hmm.
I'm surprised they have it now. Like, it was still in its really early stage, but it's quite developed.
Okay, which platform is this? Is it that an actual course, like physical,
or an online? Yeah, it's a university of Wollongong.
Yeah.
If I hope I didn't butcher the name. I mean, I studied there for 2.5 years.
Okay.
But yeah, because. The course was actually game artist. Basically, you just learn everything that a game artist need to do.
That's pretty cool.
Concept art. Yeah, from concept art, 3D modeling, animation, but there was no VFX at all.
Got it, yeah.
It's insane, but yeah, there wasn't any.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to work with other disciplines. There's like game programmers and game designer. So they split us into three types.
Mm-hmm.
So to work with them, we're like, okay, we can make a game. Our final year project, we managed to make a game, but there was no effect on it at all.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so nobody knows how to do it. So I just went on YouTube and searched it up.
Cool.
Like how to make heals, how to shoot fireballs or something, you know, how to make sand fall.
Mm-hmm.
But they were, now looking back, they are really hard to look at. But I'm glad I took the leap because it kind of opened up a whole new window for me.
Yeah.
So it's a good thing. And we have visits from people from the industry where we were showcasing our final year project. So
cool.
Yeah, one of my mentor / art director that I used to work with, he was visiting.
Yep.
And at that time, the amount of VFX artists that are available for games in Malaysia is still very, very scarce. And I think now it's just a tiny bit better, but it's still very scarce.
Like, what? How many digits? Like, is it a 2-digit, 3-digit number? What is it?
I believe it's around less than 30.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't really put a number on it, but
like 2 digits. Like, it's not a 3-digit because in Europe, like the max of professional VFX artists are 3 digits max. That's it. Never got into 4-digit. So
yeah.
We're a few.
Yeah. And then it's usually done by the programmers or they just buy it off the marketplace.
Yep. That's true too. Yeah. But that's the thing. Like, your game wouldn't feel unique. I mean, sure, for concepting, I've worked on a game where they had assets in just as a placeholder. But then I had to replace all of those with my own effects that fit the style, the art direction, and everything. Effects play like a huge factor in your game's success, in my opinion.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. So, where were we? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we were talking about how many artists in Malaysia. Back then, of course.
Yeah, back then.
Yeah.
So just after the final year project, I got like my second time of internship, but this time as an actual game artist. And apparently, I'm the company's very first VFX intern. Like, they have so many other types of intern, but I'm the only
very
person
first.
That is. So I kind of got a little bit of the special attention, I guess.
Oh, nice.
Like, you know, the art director was like giving me a lot of references, and
that's cool.
Well, how he taught me was really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
He just gave me a few links from YouTube, like gameplay links, and he told me recreate that.
Okay.
And okay. then he just let me take my time sitting at a PC,
wow.
figuring my way out. So I was going through YouTubes after YouTubes after YouTubes to recreate them. Hence, I think you can see them in my art station. There's like, those are what I did in that span of 3 months.
Wow.
From not knowing anything about real time mm-hmm. effect to making game ready effect,
mm-hmm.
Which is. The first game I work on is for Bacon Switch. It's mm-hmm. meant for the Switch device.
How was that as a first project? Like, the Switch is very limited. And I've talked with other guests on this podcast where they said,
mm-hmm.
they've all said, like, pretty much the same thing. Limitations are good. Limitations fuel your creativity. They make you think out mm-hmm. of the box. While a lot of people might think like limitations or working on mobile is a down, you know, a downgrade or something, it's actually on the contrary, because the amount of things you will learn, especially when mm-hmm. it comes to like how much you're limited with the technology, you find other ways to create the effects, and this all adds up to your problem solving. So I wanted to ask you, how was that working on a Switch?
Well, because it's my very first actual game project, I say it's a good way to start so that in the future, whatever effect that I do,
mm-hmm.
I can work within the limits and they still look legit, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And the programmers are happy, the tech artist is happy, and that's good news to me.
So if there's someone listening to this having no idea what we're talking about, like they know a Switch mm-hmm. exists, they can play on the Switch. But why is, mm-hmm. why is the Switch limited? Can you explain that a little bit? And how is it limited?
It's mainly the CPU and the GPU power is not as high as a PC. I mean, generally, I don't know the exact numbers of power they have.
Mm-hmm.
But my art director always told me, you have to make sure your effect can even run on a freaking toaster. or the screen on the fridge, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If it runs on it, then it's good to go. It means you can have more people to play. Because
mm-hmm.
you wouldn't know someone is running like the really old, 10 years old PC. And they can't immerse themselves into the game that we're making.
I think a Switch does not have a GPU. I think it uses an APU, so an accelerated processing unit, which mm-hmm. is basically a mix between, the way I understand it, at least, don't quote me on mm-hmm. this, it's a mix between the processor architecture and the graphic card or graphic unit, processing unit architecture. So what's an APU? You see it a lot in laptops. Some laptops don't have an external GPU. They have all in mm-hmm. one. Phones mm-hmm. are also an APU, basically. They do, you know, the same. I wanted to ask you, in which way is it limited? And can you, like, do transparency? Is there a limited amount of particles that you can emit? Memory issues? Mm-hmm. Okay, where is the limitations exactly?
Personally, I would feel like the amount of emitters, and then you can't really do really fancy shaders, you know, like, imagine you want to make a water ball, realistic water ball explode
mm-hmm.
somewhere. You have to think of how to fake the reflections, the distortions. You can't really do all of that.
Oh, you can't do any distortions, right? Like heat, haze... You have to fake all of this basically using shader knowledge, and it could go like deep into HLSL and stuff like that, right?
Yeah. Well, from my experience from tinkering things, I mean, I didn't really tinker too much into the tech side, but I realized if something you have like more than two or three textures panning and distorting and doing its own thing, the shader itself is going to get really heavy. And then if you have, like, let's say 5 or 10s of it, just 5 or 10s of it spawning, your frame per second is going to drop.
Yeah.
Because the machine is just, it just can process that amount. It's not, like, more than that.
Yeah.
What your PC can do.
Yeah, and it's also a limitation in the sense of, like, it's you can't also overheat the device because it probably doesn't have a big of a fan that to cool it down and things like that. So while an effect can play, it could overheat the device. So, like, I wanted to ask, how do you even put all those effects to the test? Like, do you limit can you, for example, in Unity, tell it to play it as if you playing a Switch? Can you, like, limit the cores and the graphic, to emulate a Switch? Can you do that? Or do you have to really build it, port it to the Switch, and then play with that?
Okay. One of the recent projects that I've touched, you can actually set that in Unreal Engine.
Cool.
Like, yeah, you can make it
emulate.
Render as... Yeah. It shows how it looks like in Switch.
Cool.
If you don't have the Switch dev kit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it actually does that, and then it will tell you what looks weird and what doesn't read, and then...
Yeah.
Of course, it's not as accurate as having it in a device.
Yeah.
But I think it gets, like, at least 70 to 80% of the job done.
That's awesome, honestly, because that takes a lot of the manual work away, basically. So you would be working with that as a VFX artist, and then every now and then there's a milestone, you make a build, then you get reports, basically, from the team, or you do the testing on your own and you check them out. But eventually you will get reports, they will tell you, you know, the water effect here is really killing the device. You know, it's not rendering, it's dropping frames, it's all of those stuff. So I guess the next question for me would be, when you're developing on, like, when you're working on a team that is developing for the Switch, a device like the Switch, how does the optimizing work? Do you make the effects regardless and then test? Or do you make the effects with the mindset of optimizing them first and then optimize again?
Well, I say the latter because there's gonna... Imagine if it's a game like Pokemon or Naruto or something that has a lot of character skills.
Yeah,
you have to start a pillar when you adhere to. Like, it has to have certain elements, and you have to know what kind of elements are just nice to have. So you work with the optimization in mind and make sure it still looks good. Yep. So we had one point. We had to, like, make a fire effect, but it refused to, if you are rendering it with translucency, it's gonna be so heavy. So we actually sketched, like, two fires, flame licks kind of thing, and then we model it.
All right.
Like, model the plane based on it, so that it reads the exact shape of the flame.
Yeah,
and then we just erode it. So when you have two of them varying sizes and varying lifetime and eroding at a different timing, it actually works and it's actually optimized. Unlike your typical, you know, scrolling distortion of flame textures and continuously emission in a translucent particle.
But this, of course, forces you to use a stylized effect. You cannot model a realistic fire without alpha, without translucency. I think that would be... Maybe it is possible, but it will be a lot of work. Translucency is expensive. That's what you learn. I think that your first lesson as a VFX artist is PNGs are expensive in memory, first of all. Second of all, rendering... like planes that are literally quads with, like, with a drawing on it that is translucent, that is very heavy for, like, mobile games. So it's cool that you shared the trick with actually, like, going in and modeling the plane. Now I wanted to ask about something. Usually when you were doing a texture based effect, like the fire, you probably are playing with 8 frames at least of a flipbook,
mm-hmm.
right? So it's literally exchanging those frames. The engine is going frame 1, frame 2, frame 3, all the way until the particle dies, right?
Mm-hmm.
How do you switch the meshes, and how many meshes can you switch?
Well, the trick that we did, well, my lead taught me this. He actually just used 2, but varying sizes, and it erodes. You make sure they erode, and then you make them scale from large to small, and then upwards. It actually does the trick. And then, of course, you play with the emission as well. You start off really strong, and then you fade it. You turn down the value. So it will look like an actual flame, but it's stylized.
Cool. Yeah, mm-hmm. And also you can randomize the rotations. You can randomize a lot of stuff that would make it look different. Yeah, and I guess this all goes through the creation of the texture that you build your mesh on, basically.
Mm-hmm.
You have in mind that it doesn't have a source, that all via source, so even if you rotate it, it would look like fire, I guess. Because like you can literally make fire from circles or cubes or spheres, as long as you're imitating the motion.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there is a lot of tricks. There's a lot of ways to learn those tricks. And I've never really imagined that that an optimization trick could be a mesh, because their meshes are, you know, they have the bad reputation about being expensive, but then you have to choose either no effect because translucency doesn't work, or an actual effect with like a plane that is a little more complex than a quad. It might have like 4 more faces or something like that. That's super cool to learn. And those things, you know, no one is gonna come to you and teach you all of this. You're just gonna learn it on the job.
Yeah, my lead actually discovered it. He was trying to like optimize the quad. I mean, I'm just gonna give it a shout out, Philip Kovac.
Shout out to
Philip. So he's the one that discovered it, because I was actually stuck on that for really long. Because how am I supposed to make a flame that is no translucency?
Yeah.
So he discovered it, and I've been using that for so many of my effects for Switch. and yet it looks stylized because it's custom mesh, but it's a plane.
Yeah.
So you can essentially just clean up the lines and then you cut it again properly. So it's optimized. The amount of quads will be a little bit lesser.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you can get so many customized shapes, and it's optimized.
And here where your background in 3D actually comes in handy, right? With effects.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's the real-time VFX is really that one multidisciplinary skill that you can put any other like discipline in. You could, if you know a little bit more coding, cool, you can implement better. If you know a little bit more shader complex language programming, visual programming, cool, you will benefit from that.
Mm-hmm.
If you know how to work with Houdini, awesome. All right, let's go. You can do now really cool sprites or really cool meshes. If you have trained your whole life with Blender, cool too. You know, everything adds up to it. It's never a subtracting. It just keeps motivating you, because no matter what little thing that you might be interested in, like rabbit hole, we all go through one, right? Like we all have ADHD in some way or form, that we just have our special interests for like a week or two, and then everything that you learn from there, you can pick it up and add it to your work. And I think it's an area that is not as discovered as much, especially when you hear the numbers. Like a country like Malaysia is like, it's huge. And if you tell me there's only 2 digits of VFX artists, it's like, cool, I want to be part of that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, so we talked about your first project in Switch. Where did you go from there?
Well, from there, I actually worked with a company for 2 to 3 years. And then I left because another company from the overseas just, you know, they approached me. Mm-hmm. And the previous company was having some, just that our method of working doesn't align because I like working from home. But, mm-hmm. You know, the COVID thing, it has passed, and then they want everyone to, like, work in the office. And I got so comfortable of working at my own time at home. So I took the leap and went to another company, which is international. But then from there, I learned a whole lot of soft skills as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, because in the previous one, there's always someone above me, like the producers or the managers. They are doing the talking to the client.
Mm.
So in the current one, which I'm still with, I actually get to deal with clients directly.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So one thing I learned is setting expectations with the client. Mm-hmm. You know, they will have really crazy, awesome ideas like, yeah, I want to do this. And then we have to, like, tell them, but your device does not allow this. Your vision, we can do this, but we can't do that because it doesn't work with your ideas, your original idea or your device. And yeah, that was a really good skill to have, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. What is more important than telling you as an artist that is working on a game that, hey, you get mm-hmm. to talk to shareholders or you get to talk to clients, and mm-hmm. you feel like what you do is very much, you know, it matters and it could lead to the project success or to the project failing. If mm-hmm. you start feeling like you matter, your job matters, your skills matter, like anything you put into an investment, like within yourself, within your mm-hmm. skills matters too. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of companies will take that approach slowly. They will start realizing the importance of ownership when it comes to your working force. I mm-hmm. feel that should be the norm and not the other way around, because if your workers are happy with what they're doing, that's the only way you could really guarantee that they will do a good job. That's first of all.
Yep.
Second of all, that they will stay with you, so you could guarantee loyalty. Sadly, what I see from what I hear, and what is obvious in the industry right now, is fear-based, right? So everybody should stand on their toes and be afraid of the boss or be afraid of the entity itself. Like, everybody can be laid off in any second. Mm-hmm. Watch out, and we will never tell you the reason why we laid off people. We will just kind of vaguely tell you that you suck, and we're mm-hmm. just going to leave you alone because we cannot tell you that we don't have money. You know,
mm-hmm.
I would rather hear that, hey man, listen, we can't really afford you. It is what it is. But if there's anything in the future, we're gonna think about you, and you'll be like one of the first candidates. But right now, we can't afford you. Sorry about that. But they can't do that because they would like literally take their shares and, you know, put them down with that news, which means, you know, they're gonna lose money. But what they're losing is a reputation, and reputation can go, you know, as good as money, in my opinion. If it's not even more important than money itself. So mm-hmm. I don't think like they're thinking that in that way. Maybe they just don't want to think outside of the box, or maybe they're too afraid to risk anything. But the thing is, like, if none of us in the industry start risking and think about things differently, yeah, we'll all sink, you know? And it is the case right now. The industry is not doing so well. It's just that, you know, at one point, I think they were like, well, what you have to do is make one title and make success with that title, and just make the second part and then the third part and then the fourth part, and you just keep making money like this, keep milking the franchise. But that is not working anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, people are looking into something new, fresh blood, fresh ideas, you know, more diverse ideas within games. I've said that many, many times. Like, we have games like... what is that? What is that new game where you climb with like four? Yeah. What is that? It's pretty new, but it's also Peak. I think it's called Peak. Yeah. Like, you have games like Peak, Lethal Company, Expedition 33 that are... Yeah, I'm not saying Expedition is like a double A or anything, but like it's from Europe, it's fresh. You know, the teams are mostly juniors and stuff like that, you know? They all come in... they bring in all this fresh ideas and implement, like, all those risks become more attractive to the people to buy because it's new. It's I just don't see myself buying another Ubisoft game. You know what I mean? Like, I get it. Since Assassin's Creed, you've been doing the same. Since Far Cry 3, you've been doing the same. It's like, I get it. Or that other game from Guerrilla, what is it called? Horizon Zero Dawn. Like, I like it. I enjoy it. But the second part, it was just like a downgrade from the first one for me. I was like, why did I put 60 euros into this? You know what I mean? Like, I didn't feel like I could have just plugged in the older one and had more fun. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, back to you. Segue.
No, all good. I mean, with the state of industry, and the state of the companies out there, we're just all trying to survive. But I'll say for us that are not in the higher position, like the higher part in the hierarchy.
Yeah.
It's more important to equip yourself with more skills and networking. So you don't really feel that much of a pain when, you know, someone decides to, you know, I'm sorry, we have to let you go for whatever reason.
Yeah. I agree with that. I feel like even if you're hired, you should have the mentality of being a freelancer in the sense of don't burn bridges. And, you know, always keep an eye for opportunities, even if you're hired. Yep. Even if you're hired, you don't own anybody anything. It's totally fine to keep looking and just see what your value is in the market.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, always have a plan B and a plan C and a D and... Even if that means you're just not going to work in the industry for a year or so, it does not matter.
Yeah.
That does not matter. You're not doing this out of just out of money, right?
Yeah.
You should be able to do it out of dignity, first of all, so that you don't get used even if you're, you know, desperate for a job. Because once you do that, the companies get greedy and they want to use a lot of people like you and who have less skills than you in a horrible way. Like, my advice is to anybody with any industry, don't be desperate. Like, doesn't matter how much you love it, don't be desperate. Mm-hmm. Like, work in a coffee shop, there's no shame in that. And still do what you want to do and get better, get your portfolio better, apply later. A lot of people just look at this as a job, which is sad to see.
Oh, yeah. I actually have friends telling me that I'm nuts because I have this thing. I like to look at tutorials and visit VFX site outside of my working hours.
Yeah.
They're like, why are you looking at work stuff out of your work hours? I'm like, I actually was thinking maybe I'm insane, but no, it's just mainly I just like to look at things online, you know.
Yeah.
How does this person do this? How did they make it look so awesome?
Mm-hmm.
Like, break it down.
Because you enjoy it, you enjoy the craft, right?
Yes. But aside from that, I do this year after. It's a little late, but I think it's still okay. I'm looking to find places where I can grow my finance as well, just in case if I lose jobs. You know, like,
it's always good.
So. Don't put all your eggs in one basket.
Totally.
Yeah. You can focus at the job, passionate about it, but you never know if someone just decide to ax you one day because, you know, the company is not doing well or something.
Like, the sentiment right now when I look online, especially after the huge layoffs that we have, that I do feel like it's personal. Everybody's taking it personal. And I understand that to a huge degree. And I understand where they come from, and I know it's painful, and I've been there. In the end, it's just business.
Yes.
The reason why we don't have rights is because we never really cared to have rights. honestly. There are rights. There are enough mm-hmm. rights, but we need more. We need more union. Yes. Union. We need, like, one of the silly things is, like, for example, in a country like Austria, you mm-hmm. there's no, they call it Kollektivvertrag, which is like a collective a contract, which is like the union of the workers that mm-hmm. work in that certain industry. We are under mm-hmm. IT, and we do nothing that is related to IT. Maybe a bit closer, like we work with computers. Cool, yeah, but where's the games, right? Like, where is mm-hmm. where is that I am a real-time VFX artist? Where is that? And because we don't have that, we don't have that union, that like something to lay back on as mm-hmm. people who work in the games industry, we get used. And because we're desperate, no matter how good we are, like, if you read like one of those AAA companies' contracts, it's silly. It's limiting to a silly level, to where they can't even like go on an interview. You know why? Because they will be headhunted. Like,
oh yeah.
Wow, what the hell? You know, this is just modern day slavery, mm-hmm. and we're just signing that without thinking. Because, oh, I will be working for a so and so company, and it's like, why are you selling your soul literally just to work for a company? And it gets bad for everybody.
Yeah, you know? I mean, there's good and bad. It would be okay for the fresh grad, I think. You know, personally, I feel like the fresh grads should just go in there and experience it for a year.
Yeah.
You know? So you know how to handle any pressure that comes in the future. So you don't get burned out that easily because you've seen worse. Because that's how I went through.
Yeah.
So I actually enjoyed my craft more now because I went through the worst. So any company that gave me the opportunity, I will look at it like, if it's within my comfort level, I'll take it.
Yeah, sure. And there are different comfort levels for different people.
Yes.
You have fresh grads who've never really had a father and mother to stay with at their home. If you have a mm-hmm. papa and a mama that you could stay with, and could stay at their place until your unpaid internship is mm-hmm. done, cool, and then mm-hmm. do an unpaid internship or whatever. I'm totally against unpaid stuff. Unpaid anything is bad. It's just bad for everybody. When you're accepting that out of desperation because you need experience... The whole industry structuring itself as in like, oh, juniors should have 3 years experience at the very least. That is wrong. We should not mm-hmm. accept that. We should stand up against it, regardless of who has the money, honestly. Because mm-hmm. what brought us to that position so far is us accepting it. What I'm trying to do is making a platform mm-hmm. that tells everybody it's okay to say no. No matter how mm-hmm. desperate you are, and work into making that desperation less, no matter what it is. Get your skills better, get another job for a while, because the moment you get into the industry, you get paid from less from anybody else, mm-hmm. you're making it worse for everybody else. It's like, I'm trying to educate about ethics when it comes to contracts. Both ends, like on the end of mm-hmm. Of the participant, of the worker, and also on the end of the company. Mm-hmm. And one way to do that, in my opinion, go freelance. Freelance is the truest form of reflecting your current value on the market. You will know mm-hmm. if you're hireable or not. It's a very harsh industry. They will tell you no when it's no. They will tell you yes when it's yes. So you will get mm-hmm. to that level. As a freelancer, you'll get hired immediately if you're good.
Mm-hmm.
So freelance for me is the equipment to know if I'm hireable or not. Because what mm-hmm. happens is when you're applying to those internships and they're treating you as like, sometimes they make you feel like you're a charity case, which it's not. It's an investment. Juniors are an investment. But they make you feel like you're a charity case to them.
Oh, yeah.
Like, oh, we're investing in you. Oh, we're doing you a favor. You should pay us money to hire you. And it's like, no. Whoa, wait a minute. Right? So even for French graduates who have like a really good portfolio, a solid one, go into freelancing, know how contract work a little bit, Because once you have that, if everybody did that in there at their start, the whole industry will change, in my opinion. I mean, you could argue with me. I'm not saying what I'm saying is like the rule book. And I encourage people in the comments, please leave your comments, disagree with me. But like, that's the way I see it.
Yep. I think because your perspective is great. It's very fresh and new to me. I actually like that. It's just that I think it's more of how we grow up as well. Because I grew up, my parents were like telling me, you have to learn things the hard way in order to appreciate the good things. So that is a dual-edged sword of its own. Because you are going to go into something without knowing your value. And you're going to get easily taken advantage of.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why I agree with what you said. I wish someone said that to me like years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say if someone started it hard, I would encourage them to stick through it for, you know, stick around for a few months just to see how shitty the industry could get. or how bad the things would get when you're working here, and then when you had enough, just leave and then go get what you think you deserve.
I agree with you, and I agree with the sentiment of you have to learn things the hard way. There's nothing easy with freelancing. It's literally you on your own, and my argument is if you have to learn things the hard way, then just go the hard way all the way. The moment you think that someone will help you, I got some bad news for you, especially when it comes to hiring, because you will be taken advantage of if you're not too careful about it. You're too fresh, you're too inexperienced, especially when it comes to like actually making a game, that you are easily fooled. They will tell you things are that way, and you will say, you know what, things are that way. They will tell you it is total. This is how we do it. We crunch 16 hours every day. We get paid the same salary. You get to shut your mouth because you're a junior. My argument is, I'll put those 16 hours, but I'll put them all on my own terms. And even if I die trying to figure it out, at least I did it on my own way without anyone above me trying to fool me into doing something. And I'm saying that out of pain because I've had that, right?
Yeah.
The moment I went freelancing after that painful experience, I started to see things differently. I even started to see the perspective of the studio, if you believe it or not. Because when the moment you start managing your own finances, you're like, okay, the things are that way. I get it now a little bit better, even through the perspective of the studios, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so when I say like things when it comes to like respect, in terms of like, just be honest with me, tell me that you cannot afford me. Maybe we can make a deal, right?
Mm-hmm.
That is not doable, like, because they just basically straight up lie to you of... Sometimes, not everybody, but like sometimes it's just like, you really suck at your job, so we can't work with you anymore. They make up stories. They just wait for one mistake that you've done, which we're all humans. We all do mistakes. Mm-hmm. And they tell you, oh, this is against our company culture. BS.
Okay.
Like, you know, like some BS.
Yeah.
And this is not my story. I'm just saying, like, I've heard stories.
Mm-hmm.
And this just sucks.
Yep. Which is fair.
Yeah.
I mean, I think what I went for was literally because I was desperate for a job. So I'm just glad that I met the right people along the way that are like, okay, we have to get this done or I'll be the next getting chopped off as well.
Yeah.
So they are like sharing their skills. So I get to learn and... So I guess that's a luxury itself.
Yeah. Luck is what is the definition of luck? Like, it's the mix between hard work and the right opportunity at the right time.
Yeah.
Luck is not just like, you know, you sit there and you get $1 billion. That's not luck.
Yeah.
That's a coincidence. But luck is really when you're prepared with the with the right amount of preparation and then the right opportunity at the right time. That is what you need. And a lot of like big figures in the industry had said the same thing. What do you need to start up in the games industry? It's like luck. Just be lucky. I've been lucky myself. Right? And you just, the truth is there, the majority of people who work in the industry, in the games industry, are awesome people. They're awesome people. But mostly it's the executives that suck.
Oh yeah. I mean, they are the ones that is like doing the money game, and then we are just like, that money is for our survival, mostly. So, yeah, their perspective of the cash and our perspective is really different.
Yep.
So,
yeah. I mean, for us, it's a craft. What we do is something we're passionate about. And like you said, even after work, you're looking into courses, you're looking into our other YouTube videos, you're looking into breakdowns. You would do that thing for free, right? But you shouldn't.
No, I never. I actually went through that some time back.
Yeah,
it was for a friend, but not for VFX. It's a video editing.
Yeah,
because I went through that once. Ever since then, I'll never do anything without contract anymore.
Thank you for saying that.
Because they were delaying.
Yes.
And then eventually they cut 20% off at the final amount with the excuse say their client didn't like it. And then I'm like, you delayed me for like so many months. And then you just cut the amount. So ever since then, it was a really tough lesson.
Honestly.
Yeah.
Honestly. It's a transaction. It's a transaction. Yes. In which people's mind is it okay if I sell tomatoes that you come to me and you tell me I'm just going to get one tomato an hour and I'll pay you tomorrow. Do you think like if you were the tomato holder or the person who has the shop, are you going to agree to that?
Definitely no.
It's physical, it's tomato, it's basic. It's the same. It's the same. The exact same. Yep. If someone tells you, I'm going to hire you, tell them, do it. Hire me. Because I ain't going to do any work if you don't. It's a transactional relationship. It's as simple as selling tomatoes. Sometimes people get so much passionate about something that they start saying, oh, awesome, I'm making money, cool. They get so, like, blinded by the potential of getting paid that they think they will be paid. Now, I'm not saying that should apply for all the cases. If you're working for someone right now and you trust that person and they have a good reputation in the industry, trust that person, they will pay you. Because if they don't, they're risking all their reputation. Right? But if you don't know that person, they're not known in the industry, there's, and I'm not saying like popular people will pay you, I'm saying if they have good reputation and they're well known, they will most likely pay you. But at the same time, even if they're popular, but not for their reputation, their good reputation, they're just popular because of the company title or whatever, still be careful, still be cautious. And it's your own personal. It's still even good if you're working with someone you trust and they have a good reputation to still tell them to pay you first. It's not a bad practice.
Yes.
But like if they tell you the budget is not there yet, they have not been paid by the publisher, okay, maybe there is something there. Like especially if you're close friends with that person. However, like I've known people who were in contact with publishers that told them they will pay them like a huge amount of money and they never got paid. And it was a whole game. So imagine the breaking of that studio, how that felt for everybody. They all worked for months. They've never got paid.
Yep.
Yeah, it's transactional.
Yep. I would say when there's a contract coming in, read it a few times, let it sit for a day, you know, sleep on it before you sign.
Yeah.
Yep. the most important thing is definitely getting everything in black and white.
Yeah.
Which is a thing that I've been practicing since I joined the industry.
That's good.
Whatever feedbacks from the leads, the producers, or clients, write it all down in a place where they can see it as well.
Yeah.
So nobody go back to their word and, you know, make your life miserable.
If you have it written, nobody can go back on their word. And if you have if you're communicating over a platform that can be edited later, Discord, whatever it is, just get it per email. You can't edit emails. Get it per email. Don't BS anybody. And get a lawyer. It may just like one-time payment lawyer. It's way better to go over the negotiations this way, because it is everything is negotiable. That's what people don't understand. They're like, oh, contract, I sign. Sign right here, I sign here. You know, like, no. No, please don't sign here. Wait a day, contact your lawyers, make sure that you have the best deal. And even if you're in negotiation with other people that are going to hire you, bring that up. Name dropping, it's called. Drop the name of the people who's going to hire you. And now the best person that's going to give you the best offer has to hire you. And there's no shame in wanting what you want. There's no shame in that. But the industry makes you feel that there's a shame in that. Like, no, there is no shame in that. You're looking for what's good for you. I'm looking for what's good for me. And that is fine. A good working relationship is like, listen, I need to make the best deal for myself. You focus on making the best deal for yourself. I'm fine with that. And then once that is done, we get to work with each other. We will never think about that again. But once we have to think about it first, negotiate first, then work second. Never work, maybe contract, maybe negotiate. It's too late to negotiate. You gave the tomatoes. They've been eaten. You know what I mean?
Yep.
It's done. The deal is done. You've given your work for free, and that sucks.
Yep.
But like, especially in this environment right now, when everybody's panicking there, you're like, it's really dangerous to accept anything right now. Don't. Like, I've been reached by people who are like, hey, we're making a game. I'm like, okay, is it paid? No, we're all volunteers. I'm like, okay, cool. Once you get paid, let me know. I'm not interested. No free work for anybody. Because if I'm going to do free work, I'm going to develop my skills. I'm going to do my own thing. Why should I give my time and my effort to someone who's not going to pay me? Never, ever. Mm-hmm. Never, ever.
Mm-hmm. That's the base. Like, I think it's not only on the art industry. It's every industry.
Honestly, yes, but with other industry, it's a bit more clear because it's physical thing that you're giving away, and the costs of that thing that you manufactured, for example, or the hours that you put are so like logical. It's like the difference between physical injuries and mental illness. No one can look at you from the outside and know that you have something in your brain that is like totally not working. You're completely injured from your childhood until now. It's a trauma and it got never healed or treated, right? But if you're not walking right, people will notice it. I feel it's a bit the same. It's the difference between things that you see, you touch, and things that you can't see and you can't touch, meaning digital products. We can't see that. We need tools to make us track that. And because we're so passionate, we lose track on how much we were working on that thing. And whatever it is, your agreement with that person, per hour, per project, that needs to be written down, agreed upon, signed, black and white, never edited, brought up with a lawyer, everything is clear, cool. Now we can do the work.
Yes.
Never do the work.
Yes.
And then, but like back to the other industries, like I said, it's physical. You could see it, you can smell it. It's clearer. But with us, like, what is clear, right? It's constant stress. Our work is what we get paid for is our stress. That's it.
Oh yeah.
And you can't like stop and think about it because you're constantly in the survival mode.
Oh yeah. That's an issue.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, you're just like working from a deadline to a deadline.
Oh yeah.
There's no break. Every stage is super important. Every stage is super crucial from the start all the way to the finish. And most people don't even get to finish, right? And the problem with all of these stages is that, like I said, it's stress over stress over stress over stress. You don't get to make the product in front of you and touch it and smell it. And you're like, I did a good thing. It's honest. Honest work. Like, for example, when you're building a house, you're painting the walls are done, you can look at it and be like, the work is done. We don't have that feeling. We're just constantly in stress. It's like something is chasing us, like a tiger or a bear, and our primal brains, they're never really adapted, like, since the primary, you know, time, since the cavemen. We still have those stress hormones that will act the same if you're working in front of a computer or if you're chased by a bear. And so people can't sleep even after their work, you know?
Oh, yeah.
It's horrible. Like, if you don't know any of this, and this, it's not something you get taught in school, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
It's something you learn the hard way. You just get into the industry, you think you're doing something cool, you think there is no such thing as sleeping, there is no such thing as rest. You just keep going. All gas, no brakes, right?
Yeah, which is why don't put all your eggs in one basket. And then, you know,
yeah.
Oftentimes, you know, I think, okay, do I want to do this when I'm in my 60s or 70s?
Yeah.
Like, you know, the, what happens if I stop?
Yeah.
So does that mean the money doesn't come in anymore? And
I'm sorry to interrupt, but that also doesn't mean that you're going to work in a restaurant later on. Like, it could still be related to the craft, mm-hmm. right?
Well, yeah, you could, but, you know, what I meant was, like, the survival thing, you know, you're chasing, you're constantly, what if I stop being a VFX artist?
Yeah.
Yep, what happens next? That's a question that I ask myself a lot recently. So
you're thinking about your future, right? Is that what you're trying to say? And you're thinking like, I'm probably not going to be working a VFX artist for the rest of my life.
Oh, yeah.
But since, here's the thing for me. That's how I think. Mm-hmm. I like this so much. I could see myself doing it in different ways. I could see myself doing this as a job, in a game, and then totally go and, like, do something else where I could make it an income that keeps on growing, like a course. I can make a course on how to do things, since it's not such a well-known thing, and it's never limited to one, like, principle, right? You can there's styles that you can teach, then there's that you could explore more into the implementation side. I think you can always scale up on that because it has all those aspects. I still get to do my cool craft and do something related to it. Like, right now, I'm doing, like, a gig where it's related to VFX still. I'm not doing the actual VFX. Like, when I stream, maybe I do the actual VFX, which is fun, too. But I'm trying to structure my income also upon my craft, but through other aspects. Podcasts, Let's Learn streaming, working with other online schools to get paid. And just, like, trying to structure that as such.
Yep.
The eggs in one basket argument again.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's an argument. It's just probably an advice to everyone out there. Because I have friends that are like, oh, no, I'm losing a job from this company. No place is hiring.
Yeah.
And I'm going to run out of my savings soon.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, I have friends that went through that.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, there's so many layoffs in the industry. Mm-hmm. The industry is so saturated with the talents.
Mm-hmm.
Like even the seniors that are really, really good, some of them are.
I know, I have friends. I know what you're saying.
Yeah, so the more on the younger side of the people in the industry, I guess they are, like, treating it as a source of income, just one source.
That is sad, honestly, because if it's just a source of income,
yeah,
then, like, I don't know. I don't want to blame people for getting paid, because that was my whole argument, is like, get paid first. But at the same time, being a jobber, you know, like someone who just rides the job and then the next job and then the next, there's no, like, your self-fulfillment is so burned out that you just start thinking about it as you know, other people's faults. Meaning, like, oh, yeah. I don't have job because the industry sucks, and now I need to find my next job. And my question is then, why are you doing this?
Yeah.
Like, let's be honest. Let's be very critically and very honest. The industry has waves. It has had waves since Atari days, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not saying what is happening is not shameful. It is completely shameful. But let's be critical here. We're not airplane pilots. We're not that needed. We do things to make people have fun and entertain people and make their lives better. That's what we do. Mm-hmm. Sometimes there's business in that. But sometimes when there's no rice in the supermarket, someone has to bring the rice. You know what I mean? Like, they're just things that are way higher priority than games. And I'm not shitting on games here. They're very important. Yeah. They helped me in the worst time ever in my life. No shame in that. However, it's not a high risk job. Like, the way I look at my job is I'm disposable.
Yes.
I agree with that. I accepted that. I'm fine with it. I'm not saying a game can be done without a VFX. That's not the message. Uh-huh. The message is, you know, I will lose my job at one point. That's why I love freelancing, because I'm sitting down with adults that are telling me, hey, yo, we have work for you for 4 months. I'm like, cool. I don't have to fool you the whole time, or you fool me into accepting why you're firing me while you don't have money, obviously, anymore. I don't have to do the dance, the weird dance. All right, cool. Four months. You got the job, buddy. Let's do it. And then I'm out. I'll make so much money with this. I'll keep my savings. Then I'll do. I'm gonna go to the side and make, I don't know, VFX assets that I'm gonna sell on the Unity store. You know, there's just so many ways. I know it's unstable, and it's probably an unstable income. I know that. I'm aware. But don't put your eggs in all in one basket. Like, always have a side hustle in the sense of, like, okay, if there's something here, and also accept the fact that you will most likely be fired, or your contract will be void, or whatever it is. So keep on working. If it's like a wave surfing, like, if you consider it like a wave surfing, you're that's, again, to the point of, like, being a jobber, like, treating this as a job. I get a list, and I spit it out as assets, and then I'm done, right? The problem about that is, if you don't take each asset as a challenge to improve, you're not constantly valuing yourself with the market that is constantly changing and evolving. It's a tough job to have. Working in games sucks in that term. A lot of people don't get that message, though. They think, oh, you know, my dad worked as a, I don't know, an engineer, and he was in one company for his whole life, and that's how my life is going to be. Not the right industry for that. Sorry.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, that also comes with good relationship, you know, building good relationship and reputation, so you get higher chance of getting more freelancers.
True. Yep. Like, reputation is so important in this. And reputation could be with you not saying anything, just working really good. That could be a reputation. Reputation could be, I don't know, you talking a lot and not doing anything sometimes, but that will eventually be discovered that you're just bullshitting. Reputation is definitely high up there with, like, freelancing or just working generally. Like, if you work with 13 people, they all enjoyed working with you. You have 13 people that will recommend you for other people.
Oh, yeah.
But if you were an asshole to one of them, not gonna work. Not gonna work.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The bad news traveled definitely faster.
What is it?
The bad news will definitely travel faster than, you know,
most likely
the other 12 person that say good things about you.
Yeah, definitely. And it's like, what person gave me a really good advice early on, and he said, when you're young, don't burn bridges.
Oh, yeah.
Once you made it up there, you are good enough. You can burn as many bridges you want. Does not matter. But when you're still trying to make it, don't burn bridges. I tend to burn bridges a lot. I don't know. I just don't take BS so well. You know what I mean?
Well, I don't think it's a bad thing, because, you know, if you're burning, and then people might put themselves in your perspective, like, what did he went through and he burned that bridge?
I do think it's a very powerful tool, like, to make someone wake up and realize what they've done, because I only burn a bridge when I feel like I'm being taken for granted.
Oh, yeah.
You know? And this is like a personal thing. It has nothing to do with the job. But on a job, if I feel, all right, these people are taking me for granted, they don't want me to improve, although they're investing in other people, they're taking me for granted. This guy's going to do the thing, and he's going to shut his mouth, and that's it. You know, that's this cheap Syrian guy. He's going to do everything for way less. That's our guy. We're just going to keep using him. Then I'm like, all right, that's fine. I'm done. I valued my. So first you have to, okay, so there's two things. There's your value in the market, but there's your value for yourself.
Yes.
Dignity again. Desperation and dignity. Like for me, dignity as an Arab is so freaking important. Like you cannot step on me when it comes to dignity. I hold a lot of patience when it comes to things that I could hold. But then the moment I feel like my dignity is being stepped on, I'm like, I'm out. I'm done with this. I value myself way more than this job. And eventually, if I invest myself, I know if I invest in myself and in my skills, I'll get to the next job, to the next level. And I've been living my life like that since, like, I was 19.
Well, it makes you a very happy person.
I guess there is happiness to it in the sense of like your mind is relieved. I do like sometimes think I would rather be a bit more diplomatic with things, because I do think it's a powerful tool to be diplomatic. But it's an issue of communication, I feel. Like you have to be able to communicate when you're upset early on. Like the same thing with the contract, right? Do the contract stuff first, then do the work.
Yes.
Get uncomfortable as quick as possible. Like,
yes.
Because it's so easy to do overstepping at the beginning. Mm-hmm. You have to block the very first one, put your borders there, it's clear, you don't overstep. That's it. We're still friends, but you don't get to text me on Sunday.
Yeah.
You know?
It's basically being transparent and with your boundaries.
Yeah.
So that everyone can be happier when things are running. So you don't have to assume things, you know, when someone makes a certain decision and you're like, why? Why is that?
Yeah. And just like talking to yourself about it, but never really talking to them about it, which is like horrible. Because what happens is you just keep thinking about over and over and over again. And you never talk about it. And sometimes if you just talk to that person, you will just realize, all right, I took it completely wrong. you know, they meant this thing there and I took it as this thing there. And like, all right, we're way better now. So like a good advice, if you're just starting a job, ask the uncomfortable questions, say the no, like when it needed in the beginning. Don't just do automatically yes. Are you going to work for 1,000 euros a month for 80 hours a week? Yes. No. They will try. Damn it. Yeah. They will try. And it's fine. It's business. They're going to try. But it doesn't mean that you can't negotiate. All right. It's been an hour. Is there anything you would like to still add? Promote?
Okay. So I'm with a company. That is called Metronomic. You can check out some of my VFX works in there. We are working on No Straight Roads 2. You can check out the trailer if you can plug it.
Of course. I mean, I will ask you to give me all the links that we're discussing so everybody can check everything out.
Yep. The company is great. We were translucent in the beginning as well. We talk a lot. So whatever we discussed today is actually, like, you know, the good side is actually happening for me as well.
That's awesome.
So yeah, it's really hard to find a company that's like that. So I hope everyone else can get the same opportunities as well.
Yeah, we can only hope for the best and, like, try to share opinions out there. And nothing is set in stone. Like, if there's anything you're disagreeing with me, like, people watching this or hearing this, like, let me know. I don't care. We can discuss it. I can change my mind. Nothing is set in stone. I know when you're hearing a podcast and you're disagreeing, you're frustrated. You're not, because you cannot talk in that conversation. You're like, ah, damn it, this guy is saying something completely wrong. And it's like, yeah, I'm talking right now. It's live. But, like, if you talk to me in reality and you're telling me all of this, you'll be less frustrated because you'll be able to cut in the conversation and tell me, no, 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 it's not like that, Jack. Listen, it's like this. And then we can have a normal conversation. But the problem with podcasts is that this conversation is captured, like, within 1 hour and it's put out there and you cannot participate. And that is frustrating, right? So, anyway, it's been an hour and 10 minutes. I'm just going to close right now, unless there's still something you want to mention.
Don't forget to like and subscribe.
Like and subscribe. I've said that before. All right, dislike if you disliked it. Let me know why you disliked it. Like if you liked it, and let me know why you liked it. And yeah, I'll see you in the next one. Jack the Journalist here, and we both tell you, me and Sylvia, see you in the next one. Bye bye, everybody.